This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DiFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 176 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. We are talking core training for rotational athletes and why visible abs are overrated for athletes. Welcome back, guys. After an off week last week due to the Thanksgiving holiday, I figured it was a good week to kind of take a pause with everybody traveling. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving, ate a lot of food, and enjoyed themselves. Mike, I hope you did the same. Season for that. So really excited today to get into this. As I always say, please rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. I really appreciate it. And even more than that too, just like keep posting the show on your Instagram, on your story, or tweeting it out if you like it or whatever it is. It's really cool when that happens, and really helps spread the show out. So we appreciate that. As always, I don't think there are any new crazy announcements to make today. I did on the last show, and Mike and I discussed that he'll be joining me from now on to kind of help me moderate. And he has been, doing timestamps for the show and helping me with various things for the podcast for a while now. So he's kind of just fully sinking his teeth into this with me. And I think I said last time, we're going to label him producer. It sounds official. It sounds fun. So we're going to do that. Mike, welcome. Good morning.
Morning.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. I find it conveniently funny that we're going to be talking about abs the week after Thanksgiving, because maybe some people lost them. But no, excited. Yeah, this is fun. I like helping out. I like now being on it, and yeah, I don't mind that title. That's fine.
Yeah, it is funny. It actually, it is, like you said, a good time, because so many athletes like freak out, like, oh my God, like I ate Thanksgiving and, I'm up 3 pounds the next day. Like, oh, what am I going to do? I'm like, it's going to go away the next day, please. Like, at least you're not like me where it's like, oh, it's here to stay. So I always, like you said, I'm glad you brought that up, because it is a really good time to talk about this. I think even with like general population people, it's sort of a problem, because, people, and this is a pet peeve of mine. I actually tweeted this out too. I talked a little bit about, like, if you're a person who gives out like tips for people for Thanksgiving, just like stop, like just it's one day, like enough of this, go up and only get one serving and don't go back for seconds. Like, dude, it's one day. Like, it's going to be okay. I think, like, I really feel like I got a hunch that we're going to survive and we're going to make it. And I think that is a problem with today's society, as much as like we have an obesity issue in this country. Like, I read somewhere, I think like the obesity rate in children went up like 10% during quarantine.
Oh, wow. I mean, it makes sense.
Like that, like first year period of COVID, where it was like really, really bad and we didn't do anything. There were literally kids gaining 30 pounds in a year. And those are easy to track, those numbers, because those kids are always going for physicals every year. So like you go for a yearly physical before school and they track your weight and they can measure whether you're obese or not. Now, whether there is going to be a little bit of an overshot on the percentages sometimes, because like I remember when I used to go to the doctor growing up, like when I was even in high school, like, oh, you're 5'11 or 6 feet, but 200 pounds, like you're obese. Like, they don't really account for like bigger muscular people, whatever. But still, something that is definitely an issue. But even with all of that, I do think that we live in a nutrition and fitness space where people are just like way too much with this like freak out over one day of the year. And I think it's always annoying to me to see everybody, like these fitness influencers trying to, create some buzz with a tweet or a post about, not going off the rails on Thanksgiving. I'm like, go off the rails, guy. It's one day. Like, you're gonna be fine. So
eat some pie.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's a good time to talk about that. Mike, I just sent you this tweet. I guess maybe read it and we'll kind of see where it takes us. But it's related to some thoughts I had on visible abs for athletes.
And this is a tweet that you sent out, so we're not going to roast the handle too hard. you get the pass. But athletes, visible abs are not something that should be at the top of your priority list. Performance is more important than aesthetics, dictated by low body fat, not core strength. Core supported fast dynamic movements are more important than the appearance of abs, and then loaded carries, rotational throws, etc., are more important than crunches.
Yeah, so I think let's get to the first part of that, like the whole performance versus aesthetics thing.
Yeah.
If you're an athlete, you got to understand. Like, I know there's the athletes out there that are outliers that, like, you know, you got like your Cristiano Ronaldo's and I'm blanking off the top of my head that like people that like would fit this bill, but like the ones that you always see like shirtless on like those ads that are on like your Facebook, like, oh, try this fat loss pill, like it's right. Great, whatever. And then you look and it's like Cristiano Ronaldo with like an 8-pack. Like those exist, they're there, but like if he didn't have those abs, he would still be Cristiano Ronaldo. Like if he gained like 3% of body fat and got a little extra fluffier, but like was still just as fast and everything. And that's possible. Like, excuse me, there's a very good chance that like he could lose those abs and still be, you know, just as fast and effective, you know, as anybody else. And you look at some of the best athletes, like they don't have that appearance. Like you look at like a guy like, I'm trying to think of baseball. Like, I mean, I hate to use a extreme outlier here, but a guy like Bartolo Colon, like what that was, with the Mets a few years back and the Yankees and various teams throughout his career. Like, yeah, he was really overweight, but like he was pretty successful as a baseball player. And like, he was in very good shape. Like, although he didn't look the part physically speaking, I'm not recommending you be like as overweight as he was, but I'm just saying like, that's an example of a guy that was like visibly overweight, but like was generally always pretty healthy and, you know, pitched to an older age effectively. Or even in football, like, you know, a guy like Aaron Donald is an outlier. Like, he's pretty ripped up, but there's like defensive linemen and offensive linemen that are 300 plus pounds that don't have visible abs and they're insane athletes. And those guys need that, you know, extra little bit of body fat, especially in contact sports, to make sure that like they are, you know, limiting injury and reducing injury as best as possible. Because if they don't have that body fat on there, it's going to be really tough. We talk about this all the time with our younger athletes. There is like our hockey players, especially, like you're trying to gain weight. You need to gain weight so you don't get just like destroyed on the ice or on the field or whatever. And you come into the offseason at 150 pounds at like 5'11", but you have some visible abs, but we lose those visible abs because you get up to like 175. So now you just have like a flat stomach with no abs, but you gained weight. So you're going to be stronger and more effective on the ice. Let's just say in hockey, like that's going to be okay. Like you needed to do that. You could not go out there at 150 pounds. You would just get thrown all over the place. Like that was something we had to sacrifice. And I think that's why I try to emphasize this, because kids need to understand that like them trying to keep their weight down to keep their abs visible is going to limit what they can do in a lot of areas, especially if they're undersized, if that makes sense.
Definitely.
So I think that's like something really big. Like I already mentioned the importance of body fat in contact sports. You play hockey, you play lacrosse, football, obviously. You need a little bit of that on there to take that, you know, and be able to do that. And I also try to tell the athletes the same thing. Like you cannot always compare yourself to these pro athletes with the genetics they have. Some of these athletes can literally still be 220 pounds, 250 pounds and have pretty, you know, ripped physiques just because of their genetics. Not every athlete is going to be able to get to the size they need to be on the field and have, you know, that type of low body fat percentage. If you can do it, it's great. I've met athletes that can do it. Like I've had them, but there are also some I know that like, you know, they wanted to be a lineman and they were 220 pounds. So they had to get to 260 and like, yeah, they're going to have a little bit of a gut. Like it's what, you know, goes into the process here. They're not on steroids. They're not doing whatever. Like they're not going to have that ability. So I think it's really important to just understand that everybody is different. If you have to gain weight, because gaining weight is a limiting factor in what you're able to do with your strength or just in terms of your physicality in your sport, and you do that and it sacrifices a little bit of your aesthetics with some increased body fat, as long as you are moving faster, like if your vertical is going up when you've gained weight, or you're doing more chin-ups, or you're faster or whatever, and that's happening, that's totally fine. Like that's more so where the measuring stick should be for athletes is I gained weight, but did it negatively impact my speed movements or whatever? Versus, oh, I gained a little weight, my abs are gone. I don't care if you're performing better, like you're going to be okay sacrificing a little bit of the beach. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think that's like what these kids have to understand is like, you try to cling on to something, like you're not going to be successful going into college as a hockey player at 150 pounds. If you even get to college, because you're not going to get recruited or you're not going to get a Division I offer as a lineman at 230 pounds. Like it's not going to happen. Like I could care less if you're a wide receiver with visible abs, if you, you know, get shoved off the line every time, or, you know, you can't whatever. Like, are you jumping higher for the ball? Great. I don't care if you have a flat stomach versus six pack. It doesn't matter. If your genetics naturally allow you to have that, great. But if not, like it's maybe something you got to kind of let go of. So I guess that's my initial take on that. And I also think another thing that you have to really make sure you understand is body fat level is really nutrition based and not training. And I think the idea that it's not training and not nutrition promotes a lot of, poor training methods, like a lot of the crunches and the sit-ups and the Russian twists or whatever, because kids think that if they do that 3 to 4 days a week, they'll have abs. And I was there. I was 14 years old, 15 years old, and like literally came up with a 5 day a week routine to think it was going to give me abs. Like it's your diet. Like it's 80% of what you're eating. You lose your body fat and you have visible abs. Like you can do the crunches and do whatever you want to. I'm not saying that you should do them. I'm saying if you did them and you lost body fat, maybe you'll get like, you know, more defined abs, so to speak. But like, it's not going to just magically just shave away everything that's on there if you keep eating the same and create a chiseled six pack. So I think that's something that kids need to understand. Parents, kids, whoever, like what you're trying to do with your weight loss or weight gain, especially like, let's even leave abs on the side for a second. If you're trying to gain or lose weight, the training is going to help, but let's say gain weight, especially because we deal with a lot of athletes. So a lot of the people that listen to this podcast are generally going to be kids trying to gain weight, or coaches dealing with kids that are trying to gain weight. If you are trying to gain weight, you could train 5 days a week. If you're not eating enough, it's going to be minimal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if you're training 5 days a week, all like high rep exercises, things that put muscle on. Yeah. If you've never trained before, you're going to gain some weight just because you've never done it. Right. But you got to make sure the calories are there, and you got to make sure you're eating what you need to be eating and getting enough in your body, or else that weight gain is never going to happen because it's predominantly focused around what you're taking in. So I think that's really important.
For sure.
Would in your opinion, like when you were growing up, like what do you remember always hearing about stuff like this?
Well, I think, the first thing you think of, it's good clickbait, right? So like when you're growing up and you're looking at like Sports Illustrated or like on TV or like internet, they have those outliers that are just, you know, the linebacker that is 250 pounds, but still somehow is shredded. And so you just, as you're growing up, if you don't have someone kind of guiding you, you're just assuming like that's what you need to do to be peak performance, right? So, and then like culturally, like kid, like young guys, especially, like they think it's some big metric to have these abs, and that must mean you're in great shape and super strong and stuff. So, I mean, I remember the kids growing up, I wrestled in high school and college. So like, you'd have kids that are just got the low, like unhealthy low body fat, right? But somehow they have abs. So it's not an indicator of how strong you are most of the time. Especially if you're underweight. So, but I think as a young kid, if you're not guided, like you just assume that, oh, this is what we need to do. And also another thing that I thought of is, as you were talking, is, I mean, a lot of these people, young guys have to realize this is not any different than looking like girls looking up to these models in these magazines. Like a lot of these photos have perfect shadows, have editing. Like this is not what they look like when they're walking into the practice facility every day. Yes. Like it doesn't just look like
acknowledge that. That's what they do for a living.
Exactly.
Like if people have to understand it, listen, I am not taking away from The Rock. I love The Rock, but the dude literally gets paid to look like that. His entire life revolves around like his job. Part of his job is the 2 hours he spends in the gym every morning. Like that's part of his job. Right. Part of his job involves having a staff of people that ensure that every meal is literally popped in front of him at the right time with the right amount of ingredients in it or whatever. He's not doing that himself. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars and he can do that. A lot of these athletes, they have the means and the staff and the people around them to make sure that everything is exactly how it needs to be and nothing misses a beat. So you also have to understand that's a little bit different than your 16-year-old that like has to go to school during the day.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you do pick out a guy who is just absolutely shredded, they're like the 1% of the 1% that you're watching. So like, it's not a good metric or like a comparison, in my opinion, you know? So,
yeah. I mean, you look at a guy like James Harden, like he on the Nets, like he, he was even getting a lot of shit last year because, you know, they were saying, oh, he wants to be traded from Houston. So he's letting himself go and he was getting heavy or whatever. Like, the dude was still dropping 20 or something a game. Like he was
shooting
whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, like I do think it was really fun, kind of funny because he was with the Rockets looking the way he did. And then he got to the Nets and a week later, he looked fine. Like I don't, people were like, oh, that guy was wearing a fat suit.
He was wearing sweatshirts under his jersey.
Yeah. Like it's really funny, but
Well, I think like one person that I love to think about for me, just because I love baseball, is like a Mike Trout, obviously, like, especially like a year or two ago, like he didn't have any abs, you know?
Yeah. And he's a solid dude. He's a brick shit house. He's solid, but like he's not ripped to the bone.
Yep.
And he would even talk about the idea of like, he has to go into the season a little bit heavier. Like he would try to go into a season at like 235, 240, because he knew he was going to lose 10 or 12 pounds.
Yeah.
So I think it's important. And like, we're going to get to this now in terms of like, how do we train the core for rotational athletes? You mentioned Mike Trout. It's a good segue to baseball and rotational training. But like, you know, those ab aesthetic goals do produce an incorrect training mentality. Like if you're a baseball player and your core training or what you're doing involves like sit-ups and Russian twists and crunches and all that, and not, you know, things that are actually helping you, you know, transfer force through your body to produce rotational output, like, we're going to run into some trouble. And what I try to explain to people is the crunch, Russian twist and sit up mentality is very, very one dimensional. Just looking at like the anterior in the front of you, like the abs in front of the body versus where, you know, loaded carries, pal off presses, planks, things like that. Like that is actually more so producing stability. That is working on using the glutes and the abs and the trunk, like everything kind of at the same time, even with the most basic plank, like you're trying to keep your pelvis in a good position and, you know, make sure that everything's kind of lined up and you're doing things that way. It's the difference between stability and working the muscles specifically with the crunches or the sit-ups. And like I said, building the ability to control quality position of the pelvis. And I think that the biggest thing is like when you're a rotational athlete specifically, like you're a hockey player with a slap shot or a lacrosse player shooting the ball or baseball as a pitcher or a hitter, you know, rotational output comes from like your feet are on the ground, you're transferring ground forward, everything starts to the ground. So I've talked about before how the vertical jump is a very important metric to look at when it comes to improving output for like a golfer with their drive or a pitcher or whatever. Vertical power, when you look at a hitter or a golfer take a swing, if you look at right where they are before they get to contact with the ball, and then when they make contact and finish through, you're going to see like their legs and hips go from like a flex position to like into extension, so to speak. Mike, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I posted about this before. I had a golfer send me a video, and I really actually the first time I really, really noticed it was Mike Trout was at Top Golf, speaking of Mike Trout, and he was hitting absolute moonshots.
Yeah.
And literally like hit the ball. And when he made contact with the ball, like his whole body would just thrust vertically. And what's happening is the body is extending, vertical extension is occurring to transfer the energy from the ground that's coming up through the legs into the torso as it pushes through that rotation. So it's like, it's kind of ripping everything through rotation into the output. So developing an ability with a Pavlov press where you're standing and you're anchored and, but your feet are on the floor and you're dealing with the floor at the same time as the hold, or a loaded carry or whatever it is, like you are working with the ground while, you know, stabilizing and keeping your pelvis in quality position. Like those are building some fundamental, you know, characteristics that we need, you know, for what the core does. And you have to look at the core too, is like almost your hip to your shoulder. It's not just your abs. Like it's the entire like front and back, glutes, core, everything's like kind of work, anterior abs, like everything's kind of working together to produce a result. And I think that is where a lot of confusion arises from, because there is this aesthetic training versus the performance type of training. You know what I mean?
Yep, for sure.
So I think that's like a big thing that you have to look at, is just get past that, understand it's nutrition, and that your training, when you are doing training, like that's another thing too. Like those planks and pallet presses, like I even do them. Like I'm not an athlete. Like I use them in my training to hit my my core, and I feel them just as much as I would one of those other variations. And I'm not like ripping on my spine into like into flexion to do a crunch or something. So that is definitely something that I think is really key to touch on. Remember when like you reached out to me because you were doing, what was it, the frisbee golf? Was
yeah,
it?
disc golf.
Disc golf, about like rotation and you know, improving all that. And I always say to people, like a lot of that comes from, yeah, doing rotational exercises, but a lot of it's just from like building anti-rotational strength. Like if you can, do you remember during COVID when it was really bad? All right. We were doing a lot of like, I had put videos up of me like lifting a truck. Like I was like, I didn't actually lift a truck, but I was behind the truck in the deadlift position and I would pull as hard as I could. But since the truck was so heavy, it was really never going to move. And it was like an overcoming isometric type of exercise.
Yep.
I think those things, when it comes, like, and we started doing, I started doing different things where, oh, like, how do you train your core if you don't have anything to do for calories or whatever? And I was like, all right, just get something that's not going to stretch and like anchor it down. And we can do like a Pavlov press pull as hard as we can. And that was when I started to do a lot of those. And I think that was like a big breakthrough for me, for us at the facility in general, was like, okay, you know, realizing that, you know, trying to produce as much force as you possibly can, you know, into rotation, but not actually rotating, like how big of a role that plays in rotational output. And how I try to explain it is like, we talk about the force velocity curve with jumps. So like how much of your jump is with the strength in your legs versus how much of it is like the speed of your load, that type of deal. And like, I know you've been on episodes with me where I've talked about like the testing process for that.
Yep.
Right. It drives me crazy that people would try to separate or say that like rotational output is any different from like anything we do with like a jump or whatever. Like you, force and velocity all both play a role in rotation, you know, and we have to train both of them. Like Mike, think about it this way. Baseball players constantly just swing this light bat and throw this light ball, and that's what their sport involves. So if for years we just did that and didn't get the rotational output increases that we wanted, wouldn't it tell us we have to do more than just like do light stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like the average person doesn't realize that.
Right.
Like it's just move fast. And mm-hmm. that was, I saw a tweet and I got an argument with somebody about like, oh, we don't use any med balls over 8 pounds. And it's like, if they're not getting moved fast, like they're not helping us. I'm like, how can you say that? Like, I don't understand, you know, how you could say that if it's not moving fast, it's not helping. Like, why would we do loaded sled sprints then? Loaded jumps? Like,
they probably aren't doing those either, but.
Right. No, but let's say someone is doing those things. That's what I see a lot of. Like, they are doing the loaded sprints and the loaded jumps.
Yeah.
But then when it comes to rotation, it's like, oh, light med ball. From a person who's not a coach, like, what if you have a son, if you were taking your son to get trained in a few years, like, several years from now, what would you like the average parent? I don't know. Like, what do they want to see? I don't really get.
Well, it's hard because being around you so much, like I'm like more educated than I probably would be just being a parent in the space. But no, I mean, if it's someone like you're saying in this example that is aware that using weighted sleds or weighted jumps is helpful, like why to me, just common sense wise, it's the same thing. I mean, a jump, running, like those are quick explosive movements, but if you're aware and acknowledging that heavy weight training is beneficial for those, any quick movement in any sport is going to be the same way. Especially I guess from just kind of trying to think without bias of just hearing what you always say, is like there's a maximum in terms of like what you can practice. Like your speed's only as fast as it can be. So you need to look, branch out other ways that you could get better at something other than just trying to be fast, because you're not going to get those gains just by, like, you can't really practice that. Like, hey, go swing as fast as you can. Like, okay, great. But you know, if you can't exert force and if you can't get that force from somewhere else via strength training, I don't know where you're getting it from.
Yeah. And I think it comes from the misconception too. Like, and I have a hard time with this because I am very much of the belief that, you know, my mic's not blocking my face. I'm trying to check the,
you were all right. Yeah.
Just okay. Go. Good. Cause I'm just, I was getting tired of sitting in the same position. So like, I think it's tough for me because as much as I try to, or as much as I do have this mentality that we need to be doing things fast. Like I always say this all the time, like stop conditioning your athletes and they're moving slow and you're running them into the ground and they're not doing enough sprints, whatever. I believe in that. Right. But I'm also more balanced because I do believe that there are times where moving slower can get us faster in a sense. So any movement that we do is predicated on a blend of how much force am I displaying, but in how fast of a manner am I doing it, right? So what I mean by that is like I'm a sprinter. So I can move my legs very fast from one ground contact to the next, but when I strike the ground, there's not much force there. Mm-hmm. Well, that's going to suck because then I can't really accelerate because acceleration is very much dependent upon like how much I can put into the ground to kind of get going. And we got to be careful getting too much over to this, like it only needs to be fast to get better mentality, because we're just not going to produce any, especially for young athletes. How many young athletes are just not strong? And you see it all the time where it's like, you know, that's why we always preach like strength training is really going to be effective for getting faster and more explosive early on for development, because the kids are young and they're not strong. Whereas as you get older, yes, like it does wane a little bit. But yeah, when it comes to like rotation, like I just said, you know, these athletes are taking thousands of swings and making thousands of throws. And, you know, if they spend an entire 6 to 8 months doing these throws with a regular ball and swings with a regular bat, and they become no more explosive in their rotational app, or they're not throwing any harder, they're not hitting the ball any further, and they've just been doing these fast things, like, yeah, doing those things with intent as hard as you can is going to produce some gains early on. But after a while, like if you're not seeing the gains you want to see from doing just the throwing and the hitting, you have to think to yourself, like, okay, like I'm going to go train. So now if I'm going to go train and I just realize that throwing this light ball and swinging this light bat are, you know, I'm getting better, but I'm not getting more powerful, why would I think doing more light stuff in my training is going to do anything? And I also, and this is a point, I think it was Kyle Rogers made, so shout out to him, saying how like you're never going to be able to replicate the speed at which you throw a ball or swing a bat with a 2-pound med ball. Like it's just not what we're going to do. So even that is a foolish or a fool's errand, because you're not going to be able to replicate the speed at which you're doing it, which is fine. Like that 2-pound throw is going to be fast in the context of a 20-pound throw or a 15-pound throw I might do. So like, as I want to get towards the lighter end of what I'm doing, that's fine. But like he said, you know, thinking you're going to do a 2-pound throw because it replicates the stuff you're doing in the sport is foolish, because it's still way heavier.
Yeah.
So I think you need to start to look at like, if I'm doing all this fast rotating, what can I then do to improve it in my training? And I think, like I said before, when it comes to that, if I were a jumper and a basketball player and I'm going to all these practices, doing all this jumping, my vertical is not getting any better, then I would say, okay, I need to go train and get stronger and produce more force into that jump, right? So I would look at rotation the same way. Like I need to build the force that I can produce into rotation, or else I'm going to just keep moving fast with nothing behind it. I'm going to get nowhere fast. I'm going to move really fast, but there's going to be not as much force coming out of it. And that's what power is. Power is that blend of strength times speed, which is how much force can I exert in a short amount of time. Yeah. I can move in a really short amount of time, but if there's no force in there, I'm kind of screwed. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think as you're saying this, one thing that I think the question you originally asked me is like, as a parent, like, what am I looking for? I think there's two things kind of happening in my opinion. So as a parent, especially if you're not deep into the space, like you're just kind of remembering what you're told and like what you experienced. And the majority of parents, what they experience are these coaches, as they grew up, that just said, you know, quick hands or quick feet, you know, like the idea of just being fast. And the other thing that I think that kind of happens and makes these incorrect biases is something you said of, as a young kid, just swinging or just throwing or just running, like, because you're young and you're getting older, like, you just get better at it just naturally because you're getting older.
The barrier to entry gets steeper as you grow.
Exactly. Just similar to, like, if someone who's never been in the gym can go into the gym, not really knowing what they're doing or not doing things, you know, correctly, and they're going to see gains. But, you know, that idea.
Mike, real quick, I had this argument with a kid on TikTok. Cheap plug, go follow the TikTok, by the way. But I had an argument. I posted this kid. He put on, he went from 250 for three on a bench in 3 months to 295 for three. And I was like, crazy gains. Like, check out how, if you want to know how we got them, let me know. And she goes, this isn't that crazy. And I'm like, dude, first of all, that's 15 pounds a month. And he was like, well, I put on 35 kilos in the last 3 months. Because when I just started lifting, I'm like, yeah, because you just started.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a kid that's been benching for like 6 years.
Right. So, but, like, they're just seeing
to your point, you just start out, you're going to get a lot of gains. You can't think that the training you're doing is uber effective because it's getting you gains when you're just starting out, like almost anything would.
Yeah. I just, for me, I think the biggest problem is, as a parent, even like parents now who do have kids in sports, I mean, I don't want to get you off topic and off the rails right now, but there's still coaches at club level, you know, what seem to be supposed to be really good coaches or trainers that are still having their kids do, you know, 20 slow pulls after they pitch. Right. So, like, I just think that people, when they don't know too much about things, they just go off what they were told and what they experienced. And your experience isn't necessarily the best rule of measurement when you were just getting older. And so you're getting better and faster just naturally. Like, I think that's kind of the main issue.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, those old school people did this. Well, it doesn't mean it was right. Like, it really doesn't. And, like, a lot of old school baseball players didn't even lift because they were afraid it would hurt their arm. And, like, we realized that was a bunch of BS.
Yeah.
So I do think, like, you bring up a great point. Like, evaluate training for what it is sometimes. And, like, don't get caught up in, like, the results a young athlete is getting, because, you know, almost anything is going to get young athletes better. Now, you could say, okay, training's a 2 out of 10 in terms of the quality, and it gets 5% results for the young kid. So a 5 out of 10 training is probably going to get 20% results. And then a 10% training is when you start to notice, like, a 12-year-old gains 4 inches on their vertical in 2 months. You know what I'm saying? Like, crappy training, they might gain an inch. And you're like, oh, we're going in the right direction. Well, it's like, oh, I can probably go even in a better direction. So evaluate the training based on the effectiveness, based on the principles that we know, versus the results it's getting with a young kid. Because, like I said, like, anything is going to probably get them better to some degree. It's a matter of how much better they're getting versus like a 20-year-old or a 22-year-old high level athlete who's been strength training for 9 years and goes to you jumping a 32. If you don't do the things that they need, or they go to you throwing 92 miles an hour, if you don't do the exact right things that are needed for them to get better, and there's not a process to figuring out what is needed to get them better, particularly, like, what is more, force or speed or whatever it is, like with the jump or rotation or whatever, you're going to get stuck. You're going to stay at that 32. Like, that's when you start to realize, okay, like, I need to change something.
Yeah.
And it gets harder with younger kids, because, like, you might trick yourself because they go from a 12 to a 13 inch vertical in 5 weeks that you're on the right track, where maybe you are doing something right, but you could go up 12 to 16 if you actually did really, really good stuff.
Right. Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but just the idea that I'm sure every kid's different, and we don't know where that, you know, newbie gains will end. But if you start them young with, you know, training age and a good foundation, when it would have tailed off, you know, you might delay that, you know, plateau from happening if you have a good structure and training age behind them.
And that, yeah, that's another thing too. It's like, DeFranco says it, like, you don't need a machine gun to kill a mosquito. Like, I don't need to be giving, like, crazy contrast pairings and, like, insane, advanced trading to a 13-year-old. Like, you know, I believe this a little bit less than I used to. I still think it would be effective when they're 19, if we did a little when they're 13, but I really think, like, honestly, like I, that's like when we have a lot of athletes come in the first 4 to 6 weeks, like they don't even do a sled sprint. I'm like, let's do like six straight weeks of no sleds and get as much, get it one, mechanics better, but two, get as much results as we can, which is doing regular sprinting before we add that little extra thing. Yeah. And I want to make sure I touch on this. Like, I think for rotational output, like I said, looking at it like at the as the force velocity curve, like anything else. So like you can have periods of time where you just train the force end of rotation. And how I like to do that is you might say, okay, like if I want to train force production and vertical output, I could do a deadlift, right? Like a trap bar deadlift is going to produce building force output from that like flexed position of my legs to extended, which is what I do when I jump, right? And a box jump is going to do the velocity part of that, where I'm going to like go as fast as I can and jump, and then anything in between. So like lighter deadlifts moved faster is going to build some force in a context of speed. Even lighter deadlifts for even faster is going to build more of that. Like we talk about strength, speed, and speed strength all the time of velocity based training, or like I could do loaded jumps, whatever. Like that's kind of the spectrum, so to speak, in terms of like I always relate back to the vertical because I think it's easier for people to understand. That is like the spectrum we would go across when it comes to building the vert. And there are multiple tests we can do to say, you know, why do I do one versus why do I do the other? Like, you know, an athlete does a regular vertical and it's 30 inches. And then they do those static jumps that we talk about where they pause for 5 seconds at the bottom and make it more strength based. And there's a big difference between those two numbers, which means they probably need to get a little bit stronger or do some heavier loaded jumps to like get more force into their jump. Or the numbers are really close together, so we got to do more regular box jump work to speed everything up, or some band accelerated jumps to speed things up, or whatever, right? So there you go with that.
Yeah.
Rotation is the same thing. So now I can also say, and I want to just make sure I touch on this as well, not only do I test the athletes in like a vertical jump test to see what they might need more of to improve their vert, but the time of year that we're training can also be something that we look at. So if an offseason starts with a junior or senior or high school or a college athlete, you know, general knowledge or consensus would tell us that, you know, maybe we should do some heavier stuff early on and build the strength and the force output early. And then we speed things up as we go along through the off season, because we want the intensity and the dynamics of movement to get closer and closer to what the sport involves as we get closer to the season, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Turn a little bit. You're hiding on. You're hiding a little bit. You don't need to be that close to it.
Tiger Woods caught my attention. He's on the TV. So what I'm saying is like conventional wisdom would say, okay, even if we don't test the athlete, we're probably going to start the off season more towards the force side of things, build up that base, and then transition gradually to like the fastest, most explosive movements we can do as we approach the season, because we want the athlete prepared for the dynamics of their sport, and the sports are usually the faster type of stuff, right?
Yep.
So like conventionally, we could follow that. So we could take that approach, and then we could go even further and dig even deeper into it and say, okay, from athlete to athlete, if I can, you know, test athletes individually. Now, I don't want you to listen to this show if you work with 500 kids and feel pressure that you have to do this. If you can't do it, it's fine. Just stick to that conventional wisdom of early in the offseason, let's build some force. And let's transition to more speed movements as we go along. Like, you're not going to be able to test every individual kid to see what they exactly need. So that's okay. So if you have the ability to do it, you take that conventional wisdom and then you apply it to, okay, you know, this athlete, like you can even honestly, like you could do certain things. I know Bill Miller talks about, you know, doing 3 med balls, like a 10, a 16, and a 22, let's just say. And you measure the velocity of each of them. So if the athlete goes from a 10-pound med ball at, let's say, 35 miles an hour, I don't even know what the standard would be, but 35 miles an hour, and then they throw the 16-pound ball 40 miles per hour or 45, but then from the 16-pound ball to the 22, they go up 1. So you went up 10 when you increased 6 pounds the first time, but only 1 when you up increased 6 pounds the second time. What does that tell you, Mike?
Yeah, I mean,
if you don't know, it's fine. I want to pose that question to you.
So say it again.
So from 10 to 16 pounds on a rotational throw, they went from 35 to 45 miles per hour. But from 16 to 22, they went from 45 to like 46.
So you're getting to that point where you talk about a lot with other stuff where gaining like the weight or the resistance.
Adding more weight to the ball the first time, they were fine. They were able to throw it even faster. But then we added even more weight from there and they started to struggle.
Yeah, we're getting to the weight where like you're not seeing more speed or more.
Well, output. No, it's showing they're struggling with that. So like they throw the lighter balls fast, but then they don't gain much when they get to the heavier ball. Like that maybe is a good indication that that athlete is going to struggle with, or they could use more force in their throw, because when you get put the weight onto them, they can't do it versus if they throw the 22 pound ball, let's say 38 or 40, and then you give them the 10 pound ball and it's 42, they're like, wow, we sped them up and they didn't get much faster.
Right.
Like maybe they need to rotate a little faster.
Right. Makes sense.
You get what I'm saying?
Yep. Yep.
So there's basic tests. I know Bill Miller talks about all the time, and he's been on the pod before pretty recently, actually. So if you go check out his episode, you can probably hear him talk about this. Like you could use a test like that to see like if an athlete needs more light rotational work or heavier in a basic sense.
I'll link in the show notes. I'll link that episode.
Does that make sense now that I explained that?
It does. Yeah.
It's a really
does.
Good way to see.
I understand what you're saying.
I just dropped the weight on this tremendously and they didn't throw it much harder.
Yeah.
So they're not really getting as much out of their body in terms of moving fast.
Makes sense.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So shout out to Bill, because I think it's a genius, like easy way to do it. And it's just the same as we would do on a vertical jump test. So now I'm going to go through both of those scenarios. So I found that as I went to the heavier ball, I struggled.
Mm-hmm.
So in my opinion, I need to get better at producing a lot of rotational force. Like not as much concerned about the amount of time it takes me, but I got to get better at producing more force overall.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, okay, I can do the heavy deadlift or the heavy squat jump or whatever in for the vertical. How does that really work with rotation? Like, no, I'm not going to get a 100-pound med ball, right? Like, that's just, it doesn't probably exist. It wouldn't be safe, whatever, not practical. But what I can do is just because I'm not rotating doesn't mean I'm not building rotational force. So what I mean by that is you do this overcoming isometric where you have this, we use stretching straps that you would like use to stretch your hamstrings. And we anchor them to a squat rack and you get into a Pavlov press position. And you're trying to literally pull the rack like you're actually want to drag it. You're trying to exert as much as you can. So even though I'm not rotating, the reason I'm not rotating is because I'm trying to pull on a movable object. So it's not allowing me to rotate, but I'm trying to, which is the important part.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to, and I'm trying to exert all this force at once to move into rotation. So I'm building the ability to suddenly and rapidly produce a lot of rotational force.
Is that... is that also potentially teaching your body to get in like the most optimal position for that rotation, similar to
you'll find that if you don't get to where you need to be, it's like really hard to kind of pull.
Right.
But what it's doing is it's saying like that to me is like, that's my maximal force training for rotation is an overcoming isometric pull as hard as you can, because you can exert as much force as possible. You're learning to what we say, recruit motor units. So like you're getting better at, you know, turning that switch on and producing a lot of force, which if you struggle with could be important. So you start with that. Like to me, that's like the top end of building rotational force is that like, that's the heavy squat of rotation in my opinion.
Awesome.
And then you have like a 20 something pound med ball throw. And that might be like a loaded jump. And then you have a 12 to 14 pound medicine ball, which is like a faster loaded jump. And then you work down to a 4 pound ball, which is like that almost unloaded jump.
Right.
And then that's, I guess like
you're going to get to unloaded.
Say again.
Maybe you're going to say it, but like, that seems like as close as you're going to get to like unloaded, I guess. Is that?
Well, yeah, I was going to say like you'll get the 4 pound ball. And then like, I guess the closest you would get to an actual vertical where we do with no weight and it's just a fast full speed movement is the actual like swinging a bat or throwing a ball.
Yeah. Cause you're not getting any lower than that. You're not doing it dry, obviously. So.
Yeah. And then what you can do though, to even add even more reactivity and faster output into it is we like to do what's called adding counter movements to the throw. So like you do a hop, hop throw. Or you jump back to your foot and then throw the light ball. So it's getting your body moving into the throw. It's going to improve the output a little bit, make it a little more reactive. Like that is stuff that we like to do. So like that is the spectrum you can kind of follow for building rotational output. So you need to understand that it involves heavier variations, much like how we would load jumps and sprints.
Yeah, makes sense.
So you need to find ways to develop maximal force output. Like you could even do one. We do it. If you like the Pavlov pull and you want to maybe go something a little bit heavier, but different, we'll load a sled with like a 45 on each side and then you like get a rope or a strap and you get in paddle-off position and you drag the sled like that, which is, you know, you're only gonna be able to go so heavy with that. Like, you can exert as much force as you want to when you're doing an isometric pull against an immovable object like a squat rack. There's only so much you can do when you're trying to pull a sled, like you're just not gonna be able to pull it. So then it just eventually turns into like, I can't physically move the sled. So the sled just turned into the same exercise as the overcoming.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if you want to go a little bit lighter and actually get a little bit of movement into it where you're actually pulling the thing, you can go with a sled.
What would be the benefit of having that movement rather than the...
Just a little lighter. Like, it's just working down the spectrum a little bit.
So like we talked about. Yeah.
Yeah. So like you can do that. So like you could say, okay, like I can actually do a paddle-off walk with 190 pounds, but then I get to 220 and it doesn't move. So it's the same effect as the squat rack.
Yeah.
So that is what I really want people to get out of this episode from the rotational standpoint, is you have to find ways to develop maximal force output or motor unit recruitment with rotation, and pulling against those immovable surfaces are a great way to like strength train rotation, so to speak. Like, that's the strength training of rotation. And like I said, the heavy squat of rotation.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And above that too, if you want to improve your rotational output, improve your force producing ability vertically from vertical flexion, so bent legs and bent hips, to vertical extension. Improve your power and speed output from vertical flexion to vertical extension. Like, that goes hand in hand. If you're not working on your vertical power output as a rotational athlete, you're missing a gigantic piece of the puzzle that can help you.
Yeah.
Let's see what I have left on here. I already said, and then the last thing I want to talk about too is progressing rotational exercises. So you can do rotation only. So you can do like the upper body only rotates. You can do like med ball slams or kneeling throws where the upper body's working and it's disassociated from the lower, which is important. You can then progress to getting the lower involved. So I would say like the most basic is taking the lower body out of it and just working on the torso, right? Then you can get up and you can do like a traditional shot put throw where your legs are spread side to side and you're just doing getting your arm behind the ball and push it. So that's the next step. And then from there, we add some weight shifts. So you can do what we call a figure eight rotational throw where you rock forward, rock back, and then you do your shot put throw. So now that's working on, that weight shift into the throw, and then go from there. Start to add those counter movements that I said, and you can do this as the balls get lighter too, like hop forward, hop back and throw, do a jump on one, like pogo jump on one leg, 1, 2, 3, let it rip. Like, those are ways we can start to speed up the actual movements and make them more reactive and increase some of the speed that we're seeing out of them. So rotation only, then go to weight shift, and then add counter movements. And like I said, start with your heavy, go to your moderate, then go to your light. Like, that's the kind of scale that we want to work across. So I think that would be kind of where I leave things here. Like, I don't know. How do you think I, as an average person, if you put your shoes in the average person, how do you think I explained that pretty well?
I was just about to say, as someone who's obviously not deep in the space, it made a lot of sense. I learned a lot of stuff.
You're so kind, Mike.
No, people are going to say I'm kissing up, but I think you do a good job of explaining in a way that obviously like high level people like would have a conversation with you about it, but also like someone like me can understand, you know, in a way that, you know, if a parent's listening to this, actually implement some of it. I think that's really important because I feel like there's a lot of people that it's just kind of like an echo chamber of talking to people who know just as much as them, which isn't really helpful for a guy like me, like with a kid or, you know, but yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Cool. I
like how you compared it to like the loading jumps and loading with sled running and stuff like that, because
you gotta think about it. It's no different. Yeah. Like, the force velocity curve doesn't cease to exist because we're doing rotation.
Yeah. I like that.
So,
to pick and choose.
Yeah. All right. So thank you, Mike, for joining us as usual. Guys, I hope you enjoyed this. Like I said, if it was helpful to you, like, tweet it, tag me, tag Mike. I'm going to start tagging Mike in the post on Twitter too, because I want everyone to know who he is. Just share it. Let us know what helped you, what you liked. If you do an exercise that you picked up from the show, tag me in it. Like, just, you know, let us know what's helpful, what's not helpful. And like I said, we are going to still have guests on, but I really do enjoy these type of episodes, kind of like taking questions from my DMs and formulating them into an entire episode explaining it. I think it's really cool. So, Mike, thank you as always for joining us. Guys, thank you for listening. It's been another fun episode. We will be back next week, episode 177. Stay tuned. I will be talking later this week about what that's going to be on and kind of giving you some insight on that. And then I also have a couple guests in the works. I'm going to finally, hopefully, nail down Andy Galpin. He's a pretty big name in the strength training and PT world. So hopefully get him on. I've spoken to former major leaguer Lane Adams. I believe he played a couple seasons with the Braves. And he's really funny on Twitter. We were just speaking the other night. Funny enough, I had DM'd him a couple years ago to get him on. I don't think he ever saw it. And then I DM'd him about something else. We've been commenting on a lot of the same stuff on this like thread on Twitter. And he responded back, "I would love to. Sorry, like I missed this."
That's funny.
So I'm going to work to get him on. So we're going to be weaving in and out of between guests on these Tuesday recordings. And, you know, the episodes kind of like we just did, we're going to be going a little bit, you know, between both. So thank you guys always for listening. And we will talk to you next week. Peace. Thank you for listening to another episode of Muscles in Management brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jerry DiFilippo, signing off from the show that's changing how we view sports performance, training, and business.